Jeff Alcock at it. Yeah. I was kind of hoping for a smaller crowd today. But I want to start off by saying thanks to Josh for having me come up here and speak today. It's an honor. First of all, I do have a lot of drugs in my story, so I'll try to keep as much down as possible. I will be saying some really nasty things about my father. But in the same sentence, he was a great dad, and I loved him very much. He passed away at 51. So I've been thinking a lot here lately. I get up and I sit on the back porch, smoke my cigarettes, drink my coffee, and I guess it's kind of meditation. And you know, the longer that I stay sober, the more memories that I have. You know, I can remember back to probably 5 years old. My old man used to take me to the bars with him. And I don't know if how many of y'all remember the little peel things where you get cherries or whatever, but I would sit in the table or something and sit at the bar with him, but drink Cokes, you know, and he would go over there and do his thing. And it was always, don't tell your mother. So, okay. All right, so I was probably, would have been 5 years old. My sister was diagnosed with leukemia. I had gotten passed around a good bit back then. From like neighbor to neighbor, or family would come into town because, my mother and father would have to go to the hospital, and spend the night or whatever. So I kind of resented that. We were supposed to go to Florida one for vacation, and it had to be canceled because of my sister. So this tells you, and I got pissed. I can remember being pissed. So it tells you how far back my self-centeredness and my selfishness was. You know, it went all the way back to 5 years. You know, my dad was a full-blown alcoholic. I hate the word abuse unless it comes to, like sexual abuse or rape or something like that. But it was more mental and verbal abuse that I endured, that my family endured. I could remember him coming home, and he came home one evening and he walked in the door. And the next thing I know, he's backwards down the steps. And then he ended up having to go to the hospital. There was a birthday that my mom had made a special pie for him. And this one just actually came to me not really long ago. I remember my mother and I were in the kitchen. And we were sitting there giggling. She made this pie. Everybody was happy. I don't even know where my sister was, because I'll be honest with you, I resented my sister, because of, all the way up to who knows how many years, my mother used to say, that out of your whole childhood, that was the one thing you remembered, was you didn't get to go to Florida, so we're sitting in the kitchen, right, and I remember the phone rings. It was one of them dial phones. I don't know how many are old enough to remember the dial phones. Some of you younger guys and gals probably don't remember those things. Sitting there, and my mom got on the phone, and it was my father. And next thing I know, she's yelling and screaming, slams the phone down, picks up the pie, and slings it across the kitchen. I'm trying to talk slow so I don't say the F-bomb, because I'm being recorded. But I can't promise anything, Damon. But I remember her picking up the pie and slinging it across the kitchen. And that scared the poop. I can't say shit. It scared the shit out of me, because I had never seen my mother that mad, there was another time that I heard a story that my father had gotten drunk and jumped into a pool and almost drowned. So, this is, I was told I had PTSD or whatever that is. And I only thought the military was ones that could get that. But I was told that's wrong. So, I'm not trying to take anything from the military, but I was, and I guess I suppress those memories now, But I don't, you know, but it, like I said, the longer that I stay sober and clean, I guess I'm, you know, I'm growing up as an adult. You know, they say whenever you start drugs is basically when you stop, you know, if that's true or not, I don't know. So, you know, almost drowned, birthday. Okay, so that was from 5 to who knows how old. My first drink was, I was 8 years old when I had my first drink. My parents, we used to trade houses, going to parties and such. So it was our house. And I can remember my father asked me if I wanted any beer. Oh, well, I'm like fucking 8 years old. And I'm like, oh, heck yeah, I want some beer. You know, so it was a green, I can imagine, I remember it specifically. It was a green glass, and he put about that much beer in it and an ice cube. And he sent me downstairs because it was a split foyer. And he sent me downstairs, watch TV. And I believe that was when my alcoholism kicked in. And I was at 8 years old. Because after that, every time we'd go to a party, I was kind of like the bartender. You know, the adults were like, hey, will you go get me this? And I mean, I never mixed drinks, obviously, you know, but if they wanted straight liquor, I'd pour straight liquor. You know, and then somebody was like, whoa, 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 too much. You know, or when the empty glasses, you know. So, and then, you know, I was bullied a lot growing up. You know, I guess you would say I was fat. You know, and I wasn't as tall and big as I am now. I was a lot shorter. You know, so my nickname was Fat Boy. Then that carried on all the way up until like middle school, you know, and I took it, and it hurt a lot, you know, because the ones that were even my friends called it to me, or that I thought were my friends, excuse me, so I took it, you know, and it went on, and, you know, it made me feel less of a person, I guess you would say. It just didn't. It was like I didn't. Nobody. I felt like nobody liked me, I guess. It was just you know, the friends that I had, supposedly the friends that I had, when they called it to me, I was just like, you know, I thought you were my friend, but I never said anything. It was always my thoughts. So, you know, it all started, you know, it was a lot of that going on. So when I got some notes right here so I can figure out why I'm looking down. You know, and then one day I didn't realize I shot up, I guess, puberty or whatever. So I shot up, you know, and I was like 6 foot something in sixth grade. And this kid behind me threw a piece of paper at me, and he said, hey, fat boy, let me borrow a pencil. And he said it again, and I turned around and I said, what did you call me? And he said, you heard me, I called you fat boy. Well, I picked up the chair that I was sitting in, and I beat the hell out of him with it. And I guess that's when my rage and everything kicked in, and that was at sixth grade. You know, I was obviously suspended. Parents took me to counselor to see, you know, why I had picked up a chair and put this kid in the hospital. At what? How old you were? Not even 12, 11, 12, somewhere around there. So, you know, that's when my anger kicked in. You know, when it was, and it didn't scare me. It didn't scare me. It made me feel good that I did that. You know, it was like I was proud of myself for sticking up for myself. You know, and this whole time, you know, I'm still sipping on beer, stealing my dad's beers. I remember he was drinking Blatz. Ugh, that was some nasty stuff. I don't know. I really don't know what happened during the, when I was doing it. It kind of like blacked out when I was hitting this dude with the chair. I didn't realize in the middle of what I was doing, you know. So when I went to, when I started in, let's see, how was it, eighth grade was in the first time I smoked pot. So, that felt, made me feel good because I could get out of myself. On into high school, I played football my ninth grade year, and I went into football in my 10th grade year. And then, speaking of which, nobody call me Fat Boy again, by the way. That nickname was gone. When I started playing football, they called me Big Bird. So, and that was okay, Big Bird, you know, I was tall and everything. And I played tight end, and I played up in the 10th grade, and I probably could have gone to college and played football. I wouldn't have been D1, obviously, because I wasn't smart enough to get into a school that way. But I probably could have played football into college. But I found out what drugs, football, and girls were all about. You know, I'd much rather on Friday night be hanging out with a girl than having a couple coaches slapping me on the ass, telling me I'm doing a good job. You know, so probably ninth grade was the first time I did cocaine, too. My friend and I were, he worked for my, the older friend that I had worked for at Gwinnett County at the time. And he worked for the sign department. And we had to, he had to go in there for something. I think he ended up getting charged with stealing this metal. But we were in Gwinnett County Jail, and we were in this office. And he goes, have you ever done coke before? I'm like, no. He goes, you want to try it? I'm like, well, shit, yeah, why not? Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And I knew at that age that was the drug for me, you know, because it didn't bring me down, it brought me up. And I was always kind of an upper guy. But, you know, after quitting football in 10th grade, started hanging around the rednecks. I had a big old truck with the big old tires, you know, the roll bar and the floodlights. You know, playing Hank Williams Jr. and, you know, and all that, going four-wheeling. And, you know, we used to go back to the woods, the hills that we used to climb with our trucks. And we all had a gas station that we used to go to. It was called Buddy's Beer Shack is what we had. He didn't give a damn how old you were as long as you had money. You'd walk in, give him whatever it was like $7 for a six-pack, which was expensive back then. I mean, this is before 1990, you know. But we didn't complain about it. So when you saw somebody walking out with a paper sack, you knew they had a six-pack of beer. So, but we'd go back to the woods, and after we went four-wheeling and all that, we'd all gather around, build a big old fire, and drink. Well, I was never one that would just drink three or four beers. You know, I was drink till I just couldn't drink no more. I had one of those, what I call puke and rally. I'd throw up and start again, you know, give me more. So that went on all through my high school years. I didn't make it to graduation, thank God. My mother actually made me stay in high school. And then, after high school, it was just the same old routine, hanging out with the rednecks, doing this and that. You know, just the same old thing. Then I turned 21. I probably wish I'd never turned 21. Because that's when, I guess you would call it, game on. I used to hang out at a place called Mama's Country Showcase over off Covington Highway. And I was there Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. Basically blew all my paycheck. My mother and father had an intervention with me. I guess when I was 21, they had an intervention with me. And I was just like, you know, I said, look, I'm not gonna quit drinking. Just ain't gonna happen. You know, my dad was like, you know, well, just tone it down a little bit. I was like, okay, I'll tone it down. You know, like he was one to talk. You know, but one of the reasons they had intervention was because I came in one night. And I couldn't walk up the stairs. I had to crawl up the stairs. Well, I crawled up the stairs, and I crawled all the way down the hallway, and my mother was up. you know, and I was, you know, I remember, she went, Jeffrey Scott, my name. So I always knew I was in big trouble when she called me by Jeffrey Scott, you know. So you been drinking? Of course I've been drinking. I'm crawling on the damn floor, Mom, you know. So it was like, yeah. And she goes, what she said? She goes, you're going to church with me in the morning. I'm thinking, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Church starts at 8, you know. So I went in the bedroom, passed out. And guess how she woke me up? Two pots. Wham, wham, wham. I'm like, son of a bitch. So I got up, went to church, didn't fare very well in church, went to the bathroom, threw up in church. Not in the church, but actually in the bathroom. So, yeah, that was, yeah, that was very interesting. Very, very, very interesting, you know. You know, but this whole time I'm having fun. You know, I'm having a great time. I'm living life. You know, I always drove. I never had a designated driver. I always drove. I knew I had had enough when I had to close one eye and look at my watch. If I could close one eye and see, or if I looked at two and I couldn't see it, because it was all blurry, if I closed one eye and I could see it, I knew that I was done drinking. So, or I should be done drinking. You know, then there was time, I mean, I hung out with some guys that, you know, I would say they're bad news, but I was bad news too, you know. And you know, this whole time I'm pretty, you know, I've got my temper. You know, alcohol for me was, I don't know, it just made me, it made me feel 10 foot tall and bulletproof. I mean, I was already 6'6", so shit. You know, I don't know how much taller I needed to be, you know, and I was a big boy. So at this point, I had a very big ego because of my size. You know, I went from being bullied to being a bully, you know. Squirrel. So you know, I was, to do a drunkalogue, I was in Mama's Country Showcase one time. And this cat walked by me and he bumped into me and he spilled his beer or liquor on me. And looked at me and said, I'm sorry. Well, I wouldn't accept the sorry. So I pushed him. And he goes, don't touch me again. So I pushed him again just to see what he'd do. Well, the little fucker jumped up and kicked me in the side of my head and laid me out. I mean, the dude wasn't about this big. You know, and I felt like I had a Nike imprint on the side of my face. I laid there for a minute and looked up. I was like, damn, I was like a bus, you know, and he helped me up, you know, and he goes, man, what's your problem? And I'm like, you just look like a type I could pick on. You know, he goes, you never know what you're going to get in a tiny package. And I'm like, well, no shit, you know what I mean? So that, you know, he went and bought me a drink, you know, and we sat there and chatted the rest of the evening. Ended up being pretty good buddies, you know. It was like, I knew not to F with him, you know what I mean? So it was, you know, and I was like, he was my bodyguard when we went out. You know, his name actually had to be Jason. So, but yeah, it was, whoo. So that was probably 21 to about 23. Then I worked at Sportstown for a little bit until I got fired. I came in drunk one morning, and the boss wanted me to get on the forklift and take some ping pong tables and stack them up, because I was the one that pretty much knew how to drive the forklift the best. I came in with my nice shirt, my cowboy belt, and my blue jeans and my cowboy boots. And he had asked me, he goes, you been home yet? I'm like, no. He goes, you drunk? I'm like, oh, no. So on the way of taking the ping pong tables over to the aisle they were supposed to be on, I knocked a whole display of ski boots over, because I couldn't focus. You know, and when I mean a whole display of ski boots, I mean a wall from here to there. So boom, fired. First job I ever got fired from. So around 23, yeah, my father was diagnosed, with cancer, which which is multiple myeloma, which is a bone cancer, severe bone cancer. He had gone in for a cough. He had a cough and was hurting his ribs. And they did an x-ray, another x-ray. Then he hurt his ankle. Come to find out that he had two broken ribs and a broken ankle from the weakness in his bones. So, but the old man kept working. He worked through he worked through radiation. He worked through chemo. And like I said, I think I met my wife around that time. So I think she and I moved in together around 24-ish. Remember 24-ish. And when I would go hang out with my buddies, and never invited her because she didn't want to hang around people that were doing drugs. Because all my friends, I mean, every single one of my friends smoked weed. Every single one of them. And she didn't want to be around them. So, you know, finally she goes, I want to go with you. I said, okay. So, you know, we were a couple that did everything together. She actually turned out to be my best friend, actually. We could sit and talk for hours on end. So we had moved out moved in about the time that my father was going through his chemo and all that stuff. But like I said, he was a tough son of a bitch. You know, he walked with a broken ankle every day. And he was a distribution salesman for like Cub Foods, for any of y'all that remember Cub Foods. So he, you know, chemo, all that stuff, damn near died. And then he went into remission. So, which was great. You know, I was 25 then. My wife and I got married in 96, yeah, because we've been married 20 years this year, something like that. Got married, moved in together. I mean, we were already living together. I take that back. My father was still sick because we didn't know if he was dying or not. So my wife and I tried for a kid just so that he would be able to see a grandchild before he died. So we got pregnant, happy as a pig in shit, you know, and I was drinking really heavily, you know, smoking weed. I was selling weed, but we got pregnant and I stopped drinking cold turkey. And I quit for probably 4 or 5 months or something like that. Whenever we went for, I think, our second ultrasound, and there was no heartbeat. So she had miscarried. So on the way home, she wanted to get something from the store. I walked out with a 12-pack. You know, and she's like, why are you drinking? I said, well, fuck, there's no sense in me in not drinking. You know, we don't have a baby coming. You know, I might as well drink. On the way out of the gas station, I got too close to this guy's butt. And it was accidental. And he slammed on his brakes. He checked me. So I shot him a bird. You know. Fuck it, you know, he checked me, you know. So he pointed back to the gas station parking lot. Oh, my ego and my anger, I'm like, yeah, you damn right I'm coming in there. Andrea, which is my wife's name, she's like, don't go in there. So, you know, I'm not one to listen very well. So I pulled in, he pulled here, I pulled here. He jumps out of the car with a gun. His nephew or whatever jumps out with a gun. I reached in the back of my truck and had a quart bottle. I busted the quart bottle out of on the side of my truck and ran for him. So, you know, the whole time my wife's going, get back here. And I'm like, you better shoot me now. You know, and neither one of them would shoot. You know, they were all, you know, all talk. So, ended up being in a fist fight with both of them. I got some damn good licks in, but I got my ass beat. I got my ass beat. It was 2-1. So yeah, it was game back on for the drinking after that. Let's see. My dad went into remission, which was awesome. And we were happy for that. He ended up getting cancer again, same that came back. And, you know, the whole time I'm drinking, doing drugs, and such and such. And they set him, there was a doctor out in Arkansas, I remember, that would do a transplant, bone marrow transplant, to hopefully to get rid of the cancer. So they sent him out. The insurance actually paid for him to go out to Arkansas, do the testings. They actually paid for the hotel rooms. He came home. They said he was a good match. He went back out there for more blood work, came back, and the insurance denied the transplant because they said it was experimental. What is not experimental when it comes to cancer? You know, I mean, that was a while back now. That wasn't here recently. So he had the cancer, and the doctors had told him, you know, you 9 months, year, somewhere around there, which led me to drinking even more. So after that, my sister got married, and we got pregnant again. Had the baby, Jarrett, which is my 22-year-old, and saw Jarrett one time, died on the 28th of December 1998. I will say, I've been, not to backtrack, but him getting sick on cancer actually brought him and I closer together. I would call in sick from work because he used to fish a lot because he couldn't work anymore. He used to fish a lot. So, you know, I would call in sick for work and meet him and go fishing. And he goes, why are you here? Why aren't you at freaking work? Well, I didn't have no work for me, Dad, so I figured I'd come hang out with you. So, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed that time that I had left with my father. So, okay. So, all right, so, you know, I started going to the bars and such and such. My violence kicked in a lot because I got picked on again for my weight. But I was, at that point, I was probably 400 pounds. But, you know, the fighting started in the bars because I wasn't taking no bullshit from nobody anymore. You call me a name or something like that, I'd bitch slap you the head right in the middle of the bar and hope that you would come after me. So that time I started dabbling in coke just a little bit. My family, this one's the hard one for me, my son and my daughter and my wife, and I'm fast forwarding it a lot up into probably 2017. My family had an intervention with me and told me that they wanted me to spend more time with them. I looked them in the eyes and said, I'd rather be at the bar. What kind of fucking father says that? No, I was going to say the F-bomb on that one because it's the truth. And I out of my whole life, that's the one thing I regret the most. So, I stopped drinking January 8th, 2018. I remember my last drunk, which normally I blacked out at that point. I don't usually remember that stuff. And then I got heavily into cocaine. Ended up giving hints. Started a company, was a millionaire. I want to get to the solution to where I was at, what happened. I was a millionaire, had my own company. And then went to rehab and lost it all. Had nothing. Come out of rehab and was in rehab for 7 months. Came out of rehab and was still an emotional wreck. You know, they called me Angry Jeff in rehab, and that came from the staff, not the patients. There was three Jeffs there at the same time, and my name was Angry Jeff. That's how they, that's when they, when the staff had their meetings, that's how they differentiated the alcohol, the patients. So then that got out to the patients. And up until probably last month, there was a couple guys in here that called me Angry Jeff, and I asked them, please don't call me that anymore, because that's not the person that I am. You know, I'll get to my solution now. You know, when I finally got my shit together, you know, I used the rooms as my higher power because I was still pissed off at God. My sponsor, the rooms, you know, the family that would support me, was the way that I was heading to recovery. My first year of recovery, I was on a pink cloud. I would text my sponsor, or I would call my sponsor. You know, I'd call my sponsor and would be, you know, would be whining about something. You know, he'd hang up on me. I'm like, what the fuck? So I called him back. I said, we must have lost connection. He goes, no, we didn't, and hung up on me again. I'm like, well, shit. So then there would be days that I would be in a great mood. You know, everything was going right. And I would text him, feeling great. He would respond, stay tuned. And he was absolutely right in that. Stay tuned, because you know why? Because life's going to smack you in the ass, and it's going to hurt. So the second year of my recovery, I was a dry drunk and dry addict. You know, we moved up here to get away from everything. And my wife had told me, she goes, we haven't changed. The only thing that's, you haven't changed. The only thing that's changed is where we live. So I got heavily into the program. I started sponsoring people. At one time, I had five sponsees. You want to talk about making me feel good? I would walk in that room with a sponsee for an hour and a half, and go over the book. And I would walk out and feel phenomenally great, knowing that I helped, tried to help them the best I could. And when I was in the book, I always found something in the book that I didn't see the time before. You know, it was amazing how, you know, I have my big book is highlighted and underlined. You know, there's words that I didn't understand. So what I would do is I would underline the word and write a little couple words what it meant. That way when I read the big book and they didn't understand, I would actually replace those word, that word, with those words. So which helped me. But yeah, five sponsees can be sure to keep me busy. But that was one of the most, that was the, one of the biggest things that kept me sober and kept me clean, because they had accountability. You know, and accountability to me is very, very important. You know, if I can't stay clean and sober, how am I supposed to help another alcoholic or drug addict? You know, and I can't, and you know, the times that I spent with them, you know, I'd always tell them, one of the first things I'd tell them, we'd always go over how their day's going. And I said, my goal for you is for you to be sitting on this side of the table and helping another drug addict or drunk. You know, I found God, to my understanding. I did not have a white light experience. I had the educational variety. You can look on page 567 and read that, and it'll explain it to you. Third year of sobriety, I got about 5 minutes or so. Third year of sobriety, which I just had, life smacked me in the face. I had a lot of rough things that happened to me. My mother passed, my grandmother passed. My mother, I was in the hospital three times, almost died of blood clots. Went into the hospital, thought I was having a heart attack. Come to find out that I have congestive heart failure. So I've got health issues at 50 years old. I can walk from here to the door and sometimes get winded. That happened. You know, being that I almost died from the blood clot scared the shit out of me. You know, there for a while I didn't give a shit that I died. Well, hell, I want to live now. I want to live. Don't want to live to be 100, but I've got a lot, hopefully I got a lot more time than me. So then my mother passed from an aneurysm a little better than a month ago, very unexpectedly. So, you know, life can be rough. But out of all that stuff, I never wanted to stop. I never wanted to drink. I never wanted to do drugs. You know, I turned to my higher power. I turned to the grooms. But yeah, that's where I'm at today. You know, God, sobriety, and everything else is just, you know, I don't know. But I'll call it. You know, we got about 10 minutes or so I'll call it, and hope I did some good and helped it.